This is the voice of Carnage, and you are listening to Carnage Cast.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 4 of Carnage Cast. This time out, Interview with the Gamer meets up with Tom Loney. He's the flunky-in-chief of Periton Publishing, a small press outfit that specializes in role-playing games and supplements. Depending on the title, Periton's works take inspiration from or stay firmly rooted in the old-school gaming culture, as Tom will tell you himself. Then, we kick off a new segment, Autopsy of a Game. It just wouldn't be the internet without subjective opinions and baseless speculation, so the autopsy is unequal parts, game review, and commentary about various aspects of play and more. For the first installment, I talk about Dominion Hinterlands with Dan, lately of the Arkham Horror Actual Play Recording. Hinterlands expands the exceedingly popular Dominion deck-building game. We talk a bit about how the game itself plays, the new cards, and sorts of actions Hinterlands brings to the table. Then we ring the baseless speculation bell about where the Dominion line may be going. But first, here's Tom Loney in Interview with the Gamer.
Now, Interview with the Gamer.
I'm here with Tom Loney, flunky-in-chief for Periton Publishing, a small press RPG publisher. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great this morning.
It's last day of the con. How are you feeling about that?
Kind of elated and delirious with happiness. It's been a good con.
Yeah. What have you been doing this weekend?
Mostly running.
And what are you running in particular?
Well, I ran two TNT, Tunnels and Trolls.
Tunnels and Trolls?
Yeah. That's my love. That's my dungeon crawl game, as I like to call it, the tunnel hack game.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I was playing with historical motifs, turning into getting into the Bronze Age around 743 BC, and it was taking place in the Middle East.
Any Gozer worshippers?
Sorry?
Any Gozer worshippers?
No Gozer, but we had Pazuzu, and they were searching for the Temple of Marduk, and which is a little bit later than the time, which is a little bit earlier, excuse me, than the time that we were running in, but I was trying for a Raiders of the Lost Ark sort of flavor,
mm-hmm.
but done with Bronze Age technology.
How did that game go?
There were two parts. First one was on Friday, and the second was on Saturday, and they both went well. The first one had a bit more experienced group of role players, so we didn't worry about the rules too much and got into it and wrapped up rather quickly. I had to throw stuff in to get things going,
mm-hmm.
or not to get things in, keep things going.
Right.
And the second day I had a whole family and plus one, so you had the interesting dynamic of watching a family work out the situations in a very, they were in the dungeon itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the puzzle solving, the obstacles and the traps and the monsters were fun to watch a family react to it, and that went great.
Then cool.
Then I ran my spacers. That's my own proud game.
Mm-hmm.
When I get it, I'd like to go on a little bit more about Periton Publishing here in a minute. But,
yeah, yeah.
But Spacers is my pride and joy. It's let's call it Tunnels and Trolls system in space, but without all the tunnels and trolls.
Mm-hmm. Corridors and green things.
Right, corridors and green things, fin helmets and zap guns, with today's knowledge of the solar system. I'd like to, everybody's a member of Oort Corps, and I get to play around on the planetoids of, you know, Sedna and Charon and Pluto and whatnot. And just have a ball with that.
So it's like a solar system level space campaign.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's no faster than light. Not yet. That's coming.
Okay.
So, and then the last game I ran was Call of Cthulhu. I keep that to keep my skill level up because I think Chaosium Call of Cthulhu is the pinnacle of role playing. If you can play a Chaosium game, you can play any game. And been playing that since about 82. And you gotta, and to be a real GM, a real man has to run a Call of Cthulhu game at a convention.
Like official Call of Cthulhu or just Cthulhoid?
Cthulhoid.
Okay.
This episode was Castle of the Moth, and because it was a convention setting, I could only deal with two or three things without getting too deep.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns into kind of a slasher flick with tentacles.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this the one where six players are in three different factions and they're all sort of arrayed against each other? I think I heard about this one last night.
Okay, well, that's how they described it. I had three groups of characters come in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small town in upstate New York. two federal agents are called in because this area has a history of locals having a tendency to abduct each other, kill each other, and run ransom. And since kidnap is a federal offense, the feds got called in.
Right.
And the local officials request a little bit of unofficial help. And so they're called in for that. And then at the same time, there's a group of UFO hunters who have heard about increased UFO activities. One of them is a rustler who's a minor TV star, no longer a rustler, but he heads up shows like Haunted House Hunters or UFO Hunters. And he's my NPC and he does all the outrageous monologue stuff. And then I get the, then you get his technicians and his fact checker, who's a, basically a defrocked, history professor.
Uh-huh.
And the technician, I give him points for acting like he's filming everything. So we get a lot of like vicarious MTV style footage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so while they're coming in to hunt for the UFOs, two survivors of my last game, Call of Cthulhu last year,
yep,
came back.
Back for more.
Yes, back for more. And the players came back for more. Their characters were dragged in subconsciously.
Okay.
I don't want to give up too much there. But so they weren't really competing factions as much as three disparate, coming from different places, groups of people experiencing a really bad night in a snowed-in motel.
Yeah, I hear it didn't end well for most.
Not really. I don't think it really ended well for anybody, but a couple survived.
So mission accomplished.
Yes, and somebody's got their head in a bottle right now, but, you know.
I look forward to having a conversation with that head at some point.
Next year, I promise.
Okay, I'll bring him in. Excellent. So Cthulhu is Chaosium's game, but you publish some of your own.
Yes, we do. I myself do a lot of side stuff for Tunnels and Trolls. It's just, like I said, it's my passion. It's my tunnel hack game. And then there's Robin. She is the actual Dark Overlord, or the Dark Queen, we'll call her, of Perryton Publishing. And she has she's written a D20 extract, one of the 3.75 series, I like to call them, Perryton Publishing role-playing game, Perryton role-playing game. And she takes the archetypes of the classes of D&D, turns them on their head a little bit. So instead of a paladin, you have a Templar and a mystic and that sort of thing. So she goes places with it, keeps it real, how can I say, obscure medieval historical references. And she plays a lot into that. And then there's her passion that she loves Doctor Who and that sort of thing. So,
well,
of course,
naturally.
Yeah. I only hear it while I'm typing at the computer. I don't look.
Eventually, you will come to love it by osmosis.
Oh, no, no, no.
So Doctor Who's informing a lot of what she writes.
Right, and she loves to start it out at a. She loves to start it out in like the classical D&D. What are some of the titles? I can't remember. Something on the Keep. Borderlands on the Keep.
Or Keep on the Borderlands.
Yes, there we go. Keep on the Borderlands. She'll start out with that, and then she'll turn it into a Doctor Who plot. So and she's working on that, and she's turning that into a role-playing game, which the working title is Walk the Spiral. I keep telling her she needs to call it Robin Who. She doesn't seem to like that name. I don't know why. But this is all based off of her one publication called Kaladar. And Kaladar is a city in between worlds where she can mix up the genres.
Right.
And so she's building off of that, and it's... of all the publications we've done, that one has done the best. And frankly, it's the best written. I hate to admit it. She's a much better writer than I am. I'm just some hack, you know.
We won't tell her. Don't worry.
Okay, shh. This is between us, right? Nobody else. Okay.
Nobody's listening.
Okay, just checking.
So you've got your Kaladar. You've got your Perryton Fantasy. And you do some Tunnels and Trolls work. Like what?
Let's see. Well, I'd say a quarterly, or basically three times a year, maybe four times a year, if we've got the energy and the money, Elder Tunnels. And that is the focus of that is to come up with scenarios for Tunnels and Trolls. We've started to include a little bit of like articles and essays and fiction, especially for the Halloween issue. That's our big celebration one. Everybody loves Halloween and Tunnels and Trolls.
And that's just out?
Cool. That came out October 15th. Still available, and by the way, available forever. Keep buying it, folks.
Available now.
Yes.
If people wanted to look into your stuff or buy some of it, where should they go?
Perryton Publishing, one word.
How do you spell Perryton?
Oh, Perryton. Oh, I'm sorry. Perryton. And then publishing, I'm going to let them figure that part out.
Sure.
.com.
Okay.
And we don't put descriptions by the items that we put online, just because we think the art sells itself. And we get a lot of good feedback for being a small press, for keeping the quality high. Mm-hmm. Shout out to our editors, Christy Crabb and Ia Mary Volmar from the Dominican Republic. If you're hearing this, do a shout out. Okay.
Nice. They do good work.
Yeah, they do. I'm very impressed. I'm still trying to figure out how we got such a good machine going there.
Christy's just a nice lady.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for coming up to Carnage. It sounds like you had a good time. I hope you did.
It was awesome. Thank you for the chance to talk about it.
Next, we take you to an autopsy of a game.
Hi, Dan. How are you doing today?
Hello, Tyler. I'm doing quite well.
Yeah?
So far.
So, on Autopsy of a Game today, we're going to talk about a Dominion expansion called Hinterlands.
Yes.
But before we get into Hinterlands itself, we might want to talk a little bit about Dominion itself.
That's a good idea.
Dominion is sort of at the forefront of a new kind of game, where it's had a couple different names, but I usually think of it as a card drafting game.
Okay, yeah. I usually hear it called deck building.
Deck building. Let's go with deck building, then.
Whatever.
Because it's probably more accurate.
Yeah. You're building a deck as you play it.
Right. In Dominion, the idea is everybody's the lord of a domain, as applied in the name.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to build their domain to be the richest and most powerful.
I guess.
Well, that's the flavor.
That's what they say, but I don't feel that the actual gameplay really bears that out that much.
But anyway, you start with a small deck with some money and some victory points in it.
Yes.
And you use that money to buy cards, which perform certain functions. And the idea is to figure out how all these different functions can work together to build your deck out to be valuable and yet still useful.
When you're buying stuff, you can either buy an action card, better money, or points.
Right. Action cards will typically do things, allow you to draw more cards, play more cards, buy more things.
Have so little effects and things. Money, of course, is for buying more expensive things.
Yep.
And eventually you got to buy the points. The central tragedy of how to build your deck is you win the game with the points, but when you buy them, they're cards like anything else. So they get shuffled into your deck as it goes along, and you draw them, and they're useless.
Yeah, most of the
time. There's a couple of exceptions to that where one can come in handy for something. There's a couple of cards like, and if you discard a terror, whatever. But generally, they do nothing for you during the game, and you'd prefer not to draw them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the only way to win.
Right. So part of learning how to build the deck is learning how to either get past those cards very quickly or have a sufficiently small number that they're not really troublesome.
Or knowing when to start buying them.
Right. Because these victory point cards come in different kinds. You can buy cheap, low-scoring cards called estates. Then there's duchies, which are in the middle. And then you have high-cost, high-scoring cards. The provinces, which are more efficient to keep in your deck because they take up less space and they're worth more.
Exactly. You know, you draw one, you know, you'd need eight. The province is worth 6 points. You'd need six estates. That's six cards.
Right. That's five fewer cards that you don't need to worry about.
Exactly.
And that's the basic game, is you find these combinations and the way cards behave and work them together as you draw the cards. And it can become a lot of fun figuring out how everything works together and then going through a turn and doing a lot of amazing things. Where in the beginning of the game, you would do a thing.
Right. In the beginning of the game, you buy a card. Then maybe you play an action and buy a card.
Mm-hmm.
Late in the game, you can be playing cards to give you more cards, more actions, more cards. You can get quite a chain going of a lot of stuff. I mean, I've seen people set up their deck so that every round they pretty much draw their entire deck.
Right, because the deck is small and they're drawing a dozen or more cards.
Right, or the deck even is medium size and there's still almost everything in it makes them draw more cards.
Mm-hmm. So that's
amazing.
Yeah, and one of the attractions of Dominion is you can play it multiple ways and how you're going to win. You can play a high draw deck, you can play a deck that buys a lot.
The way the base game comes, it comes with the money cards and the point cards and etc. And it has 25 what they call kingdom decks.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a little deck of cards that randomizes it. You draw out 10 of those every game. So you have 10 of these kingdom decks that have different defense. So there's a lot of different combinations of the different 10 cards you could have.
Right.
And there are, of course, as we mentioned, there are a lot of expansions.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just pay, when they're playing, they just play with just that expansion. But there's no reason you have to do that. You can combine them very easily.
Right. And the core Dominion set was designed in such a way that it was easy to pick up the core concepts of the game with cards that were interesting but not super complicated. And then each expansion has introduced, if not one new mechanical wrinkle, then a set of cards with the more complicated ideas behind them. In particular is the most recent set to be published, Hinterlands.
Yes, Hinterlands.
And we have a copy right here that
we do.
Dan acquired mere days ago.
On Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. And I got in a couple plays that night, and I think Dan's gotten a couple more since then.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. The its new particular conceit is having effects that occur when you gain the card.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as we said, there are these 10 kingdom decks, and they just sit there, and you buy them as the game goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes other things cause you to gain cards, but whatever. You get cards out of those decks to build your deck.
Right.
There's a number of cards in this that when you buy one of those cards, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of them say when you gain one of those cards. Gaining is a more widespread term than buy.
Right.
Well, the way it works, you know, you buy the card, then you gain it. If you gain a card, you just gain it. It's a distinction that doesn't matter that much right now. But, for example, the Noble Brigand.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy him or when you play him, he has the same effect. So just buying one causes him to go off, so to speak, to have his effect occur. Then later in the game, when you play him, you get the same effect.
Okay.
There's a few others that seems to be their big thing with this expansion. Other expansions have done different things, but this one's stuff that happens when you get the card or when you buy the card.
Which is actually really nice because often with other Dominion sets, you buy a card and then you won't see it for 4 or 5 turns because you have to reshuffle.
Yeah, you might never see it, in fact, the entire game, really.
Right, depending on where you are in the game.
Yeah. Or things that cause you to discard and things like that. You might never get a chance.
Yep. So that's actually a nice perk that I hadn't noticed about the Hinterland cards, because you immediately get something for the buy.
There's also a few Hinterland cards where, for example, the Nomad Camp, when you buy it, it goes right on the top of your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And Scheme is a fun card. When you play Scheme, I think all its effect is +1 card. So you draw a card and you get another action. So it replaces itself.
Mm-hmm.
When the turn is done with Scheme and you're doing your cleanup,
mm-hmm.
any one of those action cards, you can just put on the top of your deck.
Ooh.
So I had a game in which the other player and I was a 2-player game. We each bought a few Schemes, and we were always putting them back on top. And I realized later that was meaningless because they just cycle.
Right.
They replace themselves and replace their action. But it was letting you, since at one point I had 3 Schemes,
mm-hmm.
that meant every round I was going through 8 cards instead of 5.
Oh, okay.
So I was going through my deck faster.
Right.
And it was pretty effective.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of entertaining, you know. All right, putting the 3 Schemes on top. But it did move things along pretty quickly.
Right. And you can just use it in general. Like, well, I don't have an action right now, but I can throw the Scheme down. And when that action I want to use again comes up,
right.
There, the Scheme allows you to take
care
of
it. You always still have the Scheme.
Right.
It's pretty good. There's a few that are a little odd. The Mandarin. When you buy him, all the money that you had in play, all the treasure cards you had in play, that goes right on the top of your deck.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you had 5 coppers. That was your whole hand. You bought a Mandarin. Well, your next hand's going to be 5 coppers as well because mm-hmm. it goes right on the top of your deck.
Okay.
It's a little unusual.
Yeah.
So that's there are 2 thing mechanics for this. Is the things that happen when you gain and also things go back on the top of your deck.
Yeah. I remember doing that quite a bit, which was fun because you can rely on something.
Yeah, so you bought a few mandarins.
I didn't buy mandarins.
Oh, didn't you? All right.
No. I can't actually remember what I did to do that.
It's a popular card when it's out. People tend to buy it.
Mm-hmm. I've not played enough to find out.
I'm not sure it's that amazing with what it does. It's when you play it, you get 3. It's +3 treasure, +3 money, but you always have to put a card from your hand on the top of your deck.
Mm-hmm. It can be nice.
Early on, it's very good, I'd say.
Okay.
That's the big thing in Hinterlands. And, of course, the theme is... Dominion always tries to have, you know, a bit of a theme with his expansions. The seaside theme is all very nautical, South Seas Island stuff. And prosperity is all big money. Mm-hmm. But this theme is sort of got a lot of stuff to do with trading. Not trading between the players, but the theme is very trade, travel,
right? Because
the wilderness sort of thing.
Right, because the hinterlands are the middle areas between domains and countries.
Right.
So you have that. You have the.
It's all very Silk Road-y.
Yeah, you have the things that happen that go on where there isn't a lot of oversight from a central authority.
Yes.
And things move back and forth a little more freely.
Yeah, it's a very nice theme. The cards are pretty good. I don't think they're probably. It's probably not the best expansion in terms of card strength. Intrigue is still really good, and Prosperity's pretty amazing.
Yep.
Prosperity fills a good niche in Dominion. But it's fun. I always like having the new expansions because they're new cards, new
right.
things to get used to. And this one doesn't involve tokens, which a couple of other expansions did, so
right.
that's kind of nice. And the things happening when you gain a card, things go back on the top of your deck, that's pretty easy to get used to. Some of the things in Prosperity or Seaside or like, now the token goes here, and now you have to count your tokens because that means something now, and it's fine, but it can be a little complicated.
Right. From my limited play of the game so far, it seems like it's a fairly middle-of-the-road, adds fun stuff, but doesn't do anything that's super complicated or game-wrecking in the way that Prosperity can hugely distort scores upwards.
Yes, Prosperity can get very ridiculous.
Yep. And, you know, Seaside has its whole delayed action theme.
That's neat, but hard to track sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, and like Intrigue, it doesn't really do anything really strange.
I have to disagree with that. I think Intrigue has some very strange cards because
it's got the Masquerade. That's a little odd.
Yeah, because it's super high interaction.
That's true.
The base game it's sort of like you're playing solitaire with three other people. Often.
Kind of. I mean, there's not a whole lot of the few cards in the base game that affect what other people do, the Witch.
Right.
And things like that. But you're right, Intrigue, a lot of the cards are like, okay, now everybody else is going to have to do this or that or the
yep.
other thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Which is what one of the things I like about the game. It's a little more interactive, even if that comes at the cost of losing every province you buy to a saboteur, which happened to me one time.
But there's nothing in Intrigue that involves special things you have to track over time.
No.
Like, Seaside has both token cards and the actions that stay out for two rounds. Prosperity has a lot of tokens, and it can just be, when you're up there, you know, using King's Court twice
mm-hmm.
on some card, and you're basically playing a card nine times, it gets hard to follow.
Right.
It's fun, but it's hard to follow.
Yeah.
Hinterlands doesn't do anything like that. It's back to the sort of, I don't want to say simple, but easily comprehensible, nothing to overly tax your planning or your thinking. You still have to plan out your move, but not too bad.
It's straightforward.
Yes, that's a good word. It's straightforward.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the things I like about it. And after a few more plays, I may pick up my own copy.
Like the noble brigand himself, it is straightforward.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. So do you think there's a saturation point with Dominion?
Yeah, well, there is with everything. I think it was you that told me that the author of the game, Donald X. Vaccarino, had been working on this game a long time, and he had a lot of cards designed.
That's the story I've heard.
And essentially what Rio Grande does is just, you know, publishes good ones in semi-themed expansions.
I think that's mostly what happens, and maybe he's doing the picking and choosing and theming.
Yeah.
But I think they're drawing on a very large pool.
I think they've got the base game and then Intrigue, which includes all the cards to play it, so we'll call it another base game, but it's mm-hmm. a different set of kingdom cards. And then it's got five, then, expansions that you need either the base game or Intrigue to play, because you need the money and the point cards.
Right.
I think that he can probably get a few more expansions out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, it's going to start to look daunting to new people, because there's so many expansions.
Right.
And the people who've played Dominion a lot, I mean, I already know people who are done with Dominion. They don't play it anymore.
Right.
They played it to death when it came out, because it was so much fun, and now they just don't want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at some point, the people who were really hardcore Dominion lovers aren't going to want to get more expansions, because, like, I already have enough cards. If I want to play Dominion, I've got enough choices.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you know, you can play online, so you can avoid having to buy anything.
Right.
You can...
Brettspielwelt.
Is that where it's at?
I believe that's how you say the name of that website.
Brettspielwelt. All right. Well, I haven't played online, although people have told me it's a lot of fun.
Yep.
You can try out every expansion. You can set which cards you're willing to use. Mm-hmm. You can determine them randomly. So, I think there's probably a saturation point at some point here. But I'd say he probably has space for a couple more expansions.
Right.
I mean, he's got stuff that's very medieval Europe feeling. He's got the sort of late medieval period, early Renaissance period with prosperity when money starts to go wild. And
right.
And some of the other stuff in prosperity feels very early modern, like
banks and such.
Banks and goons and things like that. Goons have been around, of course, for a long time. But
right.
Getting involved in the banking and political process and things like that. Seaside's got the Southeast, South Pacific exploration theme. Intrigues, very Italian Renaissance-y.
Right, very Machiavellian.
Hinterlands here now is like Central Asia across the Silk Road. He could probably do a Far East-themed expansion for China and Japan.
I hadn't thought of that.
He could do, because they do seem to be kind of area-ish. They kind of be a little bit locale and time-based.
It's true. I hadn't thought of it that way, but Base Dominion is very traditional feudal medieval.
Yes, exactly. And then Seaside is more like Age of Exploration. Intrigue is the Renaissance, Prosperity early modern. This is now heading east over the Silk Road, sort of exploration stuff.
Right.
And then you could probably do some more India type things, some mm-hmm. Far East type things. He could probably get some sort of Vikings and Barbarians thing going. I don't even know if he wants to get into North and South America.
Yeah, colonization.
Yeah, you could totally do something for colonization, of course. So I think there's certainly enough theme space for him. But whether or not anyone will buy it, I don't know.
Yeah.
I probably will because I still like it. But who knows how long that'll last.
But can you see a point maybe where you have so many cards you just don't want to take any off the shelf anymore?
Oh, don't want to take any of them?
No, yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's always easy to the point where, well, we can play some Seaside or we could play just the base game.
So you wouldn't go mixing and matching and be more like, I'm going to grab this box.
Yeah, probably. Right. Although if I can find a storage system that'll hold everything together, I'll be more likely to want to mix and match.
You would probably need a Dolly at some point if they're at the rate they're publishing.
Yeah, that's probably true. They're putting out, what, two expansions a year almost?
Just about, on average. You know, I think the convention schedule affects that release rate a little bit.
That's true.
Because they always want to have one for Essen. And then the other one just sort of appears at the other end of the year.
That makes sense. And, of course, they have the promo cards, which you can get online.
Not for $15 on eBay. Shop around.
No, you can get it for $5.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Shop around.
Well, the newest one, no one has it for $5 yet. The governor card.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's to commemorate the 10th anniversary of Puerto Rico, one of Rio Grande's other games.
Yes.
Governor of Puerto Rico.
Right. I hadn't made that connection at first.
I think I read that somewhere.
That makes sense.
I don't know what their other promo cards are related to. I don't think they're related to anything particular.
Well, one in particular is Walled Village.
Yes.
Which is the Carcassonne
right.
homage.
Right, because Carcassonne was...
Published in America by Rio Grande.
Oh, is it? That's right, it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Rio Grande tends to publish things that other designers and publishers have already put out. Like, they'll import titles from Europe, typically. I think Dominion is one of their few homegrown titles.
Yeah. Mayfair does a lot of that, too, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a big market for it.
Yeah.
And yes, this is probably Rio Grande's only game they actually founded themselves.
Well, I think you're right in that they found it. Like,
Vaccarino did it himself.
Done the work, and they just had to lay the cards out nicely and get them printed up.
I assume he was shopping around for a publisher, and they picked it up.
That's generally how these things work, I think.
Yeah.
Unless you've got the head of a company who's a tried and true designer themselves, they're often typically looking for someone who's got a game design that they feel they can
just publish.
Mm-hmm. And it has legs.
Oh, yeah, of course. They don't want something that's crap.
Yeah, something like Dominion is really clever in that it taps into that card collecting aspect of Magic.
But you don't actually have to. Magic can get really expensive, or Legend of the Five Rings, or some of the others. And, you know, there's other games, too. They're calling them these living games.
Right, living card games.
It's collectible, but the guy who spends more doesn't get an advantage.
There is some truth in that. I think that's the big selling point. I don't know if it's always completely accurate.
I don't think it is, because you know, if you don't buy that new expansion, then you don't have the advantage. Then you lose advantage. But you know, in each expansion, you just have to buy it once. You get all the cards.
Right, but some of those expansions are also set up in such a way it rewards you buying multiple copies.
Ah, that I didn't know.
Yes, like Call of Cthulhu, for instance. I know the core set gives you enough to play, but you need to buy multiple sets to play smartly. It's like when Magic first started coming out, you could buy a starter deck and play, but you were not playing well or smartly. You were
not
playing
necessarily
with five colors.
Yeah, you had whatever was in the deck, and if you were playing somebody else who'd done the same thing, you're fine. If you've been playing somebody who designed their deck with a goal in mind, you're probably going to get cut apart.
I think that shows how Magic and Dominion can reward the person who's going to put more money and time in, which is sort of a trait of all CCGs. Magic rewarded people who were willing to design decks and track down the cards that fit those decks. And Dominion rewards the person who's putting all that time in on Brett Spielwelt and other game playing websites to see the killer combinations right. other smarter people have created.
And technically, I mean, that's just, you've put together a good way to play the game, but you don't have any other advantage over people. You don't have different cards because everybody's got the same thing every time.
Right.
You start on the same level playing field. If someone's better at Dominion, then they're better at Dominion.
Yeah, and you can learn from them. So I'm going to take back the investment part, but yeah. I'm going to stick with it rewards, like any game, it rewards the person who plays and pays attention.
Yeah, exactly. And that's almost anything in life does that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay.
It makes you wonder how many people have already put in their 10,000 hours to become Dominion experts.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure somebody must have.
Certainly not just the designer himself.
Oh, no. He must have. God, Lord. He must have played the. He must be sick of this game.
Well, he's still pretty active in the online community from what I've heard.
That's good. And maybe he loves it.
Well, I would hope so. He's clearly still
putting
out the product.
All, part of his living.
So that's a quick overview of Dominion and Hinterlands. Dan, do you think you're going to be playing this one a lot in the coming weeks?
Hinterlands particularly, or yeah. Dominion? I don't know. I hope to play it a bit. I mean, you know, you can only play when you can find players.
Right.
But, you know, my roommate and I will play Dominion. Dominion isn't the greatest thing for two players, but it's certainly doable and it's still entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I probably want to play Hinterlands a few more times, and I don't feel like I've played Intrigue enough. I always want to go back and play that too, but...
Well, that one's definitely worth picking up.
Oh, it's great.
But then I think you're going to hit that saturation, how do I deal with all these cards point.
At some point, I would like to probably take all the expansions that I've got and shuffle their kingdom decks together and play something that just has whatever. That would probably be very interesting.
That's probably where the online computer clients really pay off.
Exactly. You can just do that.
Yeah.
And you don't even need to own the expansions because it's got them all. And it's got the promo cards.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks for talking about Dominion, Dan.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure.
You've been listening to Carnage Cast, a production of NNEG LLC. All rights reserved. For more information, visit us at www.carnagecon.com.
Alex has brought this game to life.
Never trust anything that Mr. Munkowitz says.
Oh, come on. Well, everyone knows that.